තෙරුවන් සරණයි. As usual, we have all gathered here today to listen to another exposition of the Lord Buddha's teaching, the enlightening doctrine. However, indeed, something unusual today. We don't normally meet each other in this way. There's a story behind that, which I shall tell you in a moment. But before then, let us continue with our usual preparation for the sermon, in making our venerations to the perfect one, the most magnificent one, the omniscient one, the infallible one, the unvanquished one, the undefeated one, the most sublime one. He who gave us the answer to all of life's problems and freed us all from all suffering. Therefore, before we begin, let us all be upstanding to recite the stanzas that were once uttered by one of his disciples when questioned, "Whose disciple are you?" by his previous teacher. He himself was someone that was lost in samsara, destitute, without the path to true happiness. And then finally one day, he discovered that, having had a brief conversation with this great being, he realized the truth and he proclaimed his realization in these words. So let us all be upstanding to recite these stanzas, pay veneration to the Lord Buddha, seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, observe our precepts, invite all the celestial beings, devas, brahmanas, spirits, demons and so on, and we will continue with today's proceedings.
Dhirasya vigata mohasya abhinna khilasya vijita vijayasya anighasya susamachittasya buddha silasya sadhupanyasya vesantarasya vimalasya bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi akatanka tissa tusitassa vantalokami sassa muditassa kata samanassa manujassa antima sarirassa narassa anopamassa virajassa bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi asansayassa kulassa venaikassa sarati varassa anuttarassa ruchira dhammassa nikkhankassa abhasakarassa manachidassa virassa bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi nisabhassa appaneyassa gambhirassa monapattassa ඛේමංකරස්ස වේදස්ස ධම්මත්තස්ස සංඝතත්තස්ස සංඝාතිගස්ස මුත්තස්ස භගවතෝතස්ස සාවකෝහමස්මි නාගස්ස පන්තසේනස්ස කීන සංයෝජනස්ස මුත්තස්ස පටිමන්තකස්ස ධෝනස්ස පන්නද්ධජස්ස වීතරාගස්ස දන්තස්ස නිප්පපංචස්ස භගවතෝතස්ස සාවකෝහමස්මි ඉසි සත්තමස්ස අකුහස්ස කෙවිච්චස්ස බ්‍රහ්මපත්තස්ස නහාතකස්ස පදකස්ස පස්සද්ධස්ස විදිත වේදස්ස පුරින්දදස්ස සක්කස්ස භගවතෝතස්ස සාවකෝහමස්මි අරියස්ස භාවිතත්තස්ස පත්තිපත්තස්ස වෙය්‍යාකරණස්ස සතිමතෝ විපස්සිස්ස අනභිනතස්ස නොඅපනතස්ස අනේජස්ස වසීපත්තස්ස භගවතෝතස්ස සාවකෝහමස්මි අරියස්ස භාවිතත්තස්ස පත්තිපත්තස්ස වෙය්‍යාකරණස්ස සතිමතෝ විපස්සිස්ස අනභිනතස්ස නොඅපනතස්ස අනේජස්ස වසීපත්තස්ස භගවතෝතස්ස සාවකෝහමස්මි නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස
And now to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem and observe the precepts. Please repeat all together and after me.
Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Saraṇāgamanaṃ sampunnaṃ Pānātipātā vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi අදින්නාදාන වේරමණී සික්ඛාපදං සමාදියාමි Kamesu Michachara Viramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. Musavada Viramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. Surameraya Majjapama Dattana Viramani Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. Tisaranena Satthim Pancha Silam Dhammam Sadukam Surakhitam Katva Apamadena Sampadeta.
Yep. You may all now be seated. Before we commence today's sermon, let us take a moment to invite all the countless beings in these 10,000 world systems. Among them will be devas, brahmas, spirits, demons and the dead. Those who will have been mothers and fathers to us, brothers and sisters, husbands, wives, daughters and sons. Those who would have been our friends in this long journey in samsara, who were always there to lend a helping hand, to pull us out of the lurch when we were in the predicaments that we unfortunately found ourselves. So today we have a responsibility, we have a duty, something that we owe them. We must lend them a helping hand, just as they once did for us. Therefore, as we are about to embark on this most auspicious, most precious, very special activity of cleansing our minds and freeing ourselves from all suffering, let us invite all of them to join us. Invite them to witness this meritorious deed. Rejoice in these merits. May those merits help them to free themselves from the woeful planes that they may today have been born and find themselves in. And once free, may they be able to listen to the teaching of the Buddha, understand it, comprehend it, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. So, let us do this with compassion, with loving kindness emanating out to all sentient beings, wherever they may be, as long as they are within earshot of this sermon. Let them join us as we invite them wholeheartedly and with open hearts. So, as I now make this invitation, I ask that you extend it in your hearts and in your minds out to all of them to join us, to witness this meritorious deed, to rejoice in these merits, and to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana.
Samanta chakvalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam muni rajas sunantu sagga mokkhadam dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta.
Also, before we begin, let us all take a moment to reflect on the fact that although today we may be kind, gentle, soft-spoken, well-mannered beings, we may not always have been this way. In fact, virtually always, almost always, we have, having fallen into the association of ignoble, immoral persons who defiled our minds with desire, aversion and delusion, and then having been blinded with ignorance and attachment, on countless occasions we would have offended, insulted, disgraced, desecrated, reviled the noble ones. The most pure beings that ever existed, the purest of them. Today, as we make an effort to instill those very values within ourselves, this becomes an incredibly difficult task. So, the difference though is that today we understand the errors in our ways. We realize that that was once a mistake that we did. And we know that we shouldn't have done, and therefore we resolve to never conduct ourselves in that manner. However, before we commence today's sermon, just in case there may be any obstacles on our path as a result of our previous actions, let us take a moment to seek forgiveness from the Noble Ones. The Noble Triple Gem, the Sammasam Buddhas, Pacheka Buddhas and Arahata Buddhas, Anagamis, Sakrudagamis, Sotapannas, be they on the path or having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddha's ministry, the Sambuddhasana. For any thoughts, words or actions of revile, discretion, slander, insult or offense that we might have directed towards them, either knowingly or unknowingly, may we be forgiven once and for all. And as you may take a moment to seek that forgiveness, I urge you to make a firm resolve to never conduct yourself in that manner ever again. So let us all take a moment to do that now. And finally, let us all make a firm resolve that may go through the course of this sermon. The merits that we will have acquired or accrued in this journey in samsara come to our rescue, remove any obstacles on our path to our freedom, enable us to understand the Dhamma, and free ourselves once and for all from samsara. May by the power of those merits we be able to realize the Four Noble Truths, become a stream enterer, and engage ourselves on the path to liberation once and for all. And if there are any among you who may already have achieved that noble state, then may through the course of this sermon you be able to fulfill the subsequent stages, and may we be all, and may we all be able to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. So with that resolve in mind, I invite you all now to prepare yourselves to listen to the sermon. Long time no see. Bit of a change today. And you're probably wondering, what the heck's going on? And you're also probably thinking to yourself, finally, now we're going to get our sermons as videos going forward. You heard the expression, don't count your chickens before they hatch. Today is special. As a matter of fact, this is not even a live sermon. This is being recorded. And the recording is what you'll be watching on Sunday. So if you're watching this now, then this would probably be a Sunday for you, if you're watching it as it's being streamed for the first time. I prefer to do our sermons live, and therefore that is why I've asked you to allow me to continue doing the sermons as we always have been doing them, because I feel there is a difference with a live sermon as opposed to a recorded sermon. But today is different. Today is special. Because today is for Nick. Today is an exception. And no, there won't be another one. Well, I know they say, don't say never, never say never. But a live sermon, there's always something special about that. So, today is different, today is special. Because today is for Nick. Who's Nick? Exactly. I received an email from Nick. So an email was sent to the monastery for the attention of our monks from Nick, who wanted some help. And I know you're probably wondering, whoa, this Nick must be some special guy. We've been asking Swami Nuwahade to do these sermons as videos all this time and he never budged. But this Nick guy, he comes along from somewhere, he makes one request. And hey ho, look at who's on video. Well, yes, Nick is in fact very special. Having read his email, I can't help but think that he's a brother from another mother. Because a lot of the things that he has said and the way he has felt about life, I can relate to that. Not in quite maybe the same way, but I appreciate where he's coming from. So this is for Nick. Dear Nick, this is for you. And maybe for all other Nicks to come in the future. So you want to know who this Nick is? Let me read to you his email. Let's find out. Hello, he says. Hello. My name is Nick, and I live in the USA. I'm 29, male, single, with no kids. Sounds pretty good all so far, doesn't it? And I've been miserable my whole life. Now, why might that be? In fact, I remember being as young as 2 or 3 and having this deep sorrow and feeling that life was just a horror show. So he's 29 now, and ever since he was 2 or 3, that's 27 odd years he's been feeling this way. What's he been feeling? That life is full of deep sorrow and a feeling that it's a horror show. I'm currently at my breaking point and I am in fact contemplating offing myself in all honesty. The only thing that is preventing me is the survival drive and the overpowering fear that goes along with it. He goes on to say, I don't think anyone truly understands what this world is or how it works, just simply due to the fact that we are all limited humans with a biased and filtered perception of this existence. And for that reason, I don't disbelieve rebirth. That's interesting. And reincarnation could be a possibility. I also don't necessarily buy it either, nor all of Buddhism, especially the more woo things. That's what I'm saying, just like me. He must be my brother from another mother, my Bifam. However, the life of a monk seems like the only alternative to suicide for me. Sorry if this email is too blunt and honest, but as I have said, I'm at my rope's end, and I don't know what else to do. Any advice or direction would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, Nick. Well, thank you for the email, Nick. You must be some very special guy. I've been doing these sermons for... Blimey. A long time. Can't remember off the top of my head. 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, I think maybe even longer. And I think this is the first time I've actually done an English sermon to the camera. I've spoken to a laptop before, but not to a camera. So, Nick, you're very special. No one's gotten me to do this before. So you must be very special. Meaning, you must be someone who has a lot of merit. So, I'd like to see what we can do with the power of merit. To see what merit is capable of. Suppose we'll find out. And the reason I feel that, the reason I can relate to you, Nick, is because I feel about life in much the same way as you do. So I'd like you to know that all these things you're feeling, and I'm even impressed by the fact that you've felt this way since your younger years, since 2 or 3, blimey. Now that's deep. For someone as young as 2 or 3 to begin to feel that life is full of sorrow, and it's a horror show, blimey, that is deep. That's very profound. I wish I felt that way when I was younger. In fact, in my younger years, 2 or 3 years of age, I thought life was a party. I thought life was a merry-go-round. I knew nothing about life. If anyone were to come and tell me about suffering, or sorrow and grief, I wouldn't believe that. I wouldn't have believed that. Yeah, there were little things, small problems, you know, oftentimes the odd fight with my brother, right, and friends and things like that. But I wouldn't have said that life is full of sorrow. No, I wouldn't have said that. That is because I didn't see life in quite the same way that you did back then. But today I do. Today I agree with you. That life can be full of sorrow. That it can be a horror show. What has taken me 20 odd long years to realize? You understood at a very young age. Where have you been all my life? I wish we'd met earlier. I wish I were able to talk to you face to face. you can see me. And when I close my eyes, I can see you. Not literally. Just before anyone thinks, oh, Swami knows I can do that also now. No. I'm not one to blow my own trumpet. And not that I have that power anyway. But I, through this email, through your words, your expressions, your emotions, your feelings, I feel you, young man. I feel you. And I'm glad that you got in touch. I am glad that someone who appreciates life as it is, someone who has the potential, who has the insightful power to see beyond the glamorous veil of pleasure and the facade that people like to put up. I'm glad that I found someone who can actually, even perhaps before listening to any of the sermons, you can penetrate that, you can see through that, and actually see that there is in fact a lot of suffering and life can be a horror show. Now I realize this only at a very later stage in my life. It took me almost 25 years before I realized what you have realized from a very young age. So when I realized that, I knew something had to be done. Right? Just as you have realized that something has to be done, I too felt that something has to be done. Because just like you, I'm not one to let suffering overtake me. Just like you, I don't just sit on my backside waiting for anything to happen and for suffering to come and completely overwhelm me. I'm not like that. And you're not either. Of course, you're my brother from another mother. So we share another trait. You and I, we have both felt when we experience this suffering in life that something has to be done about it, didn't we? It is clear from this email that you have decided to take one course of action. And I would like to think that you would have tried lots of other avenues, lots of other things, before deciding to do what you have decided. And I too tried lots of things in my life before deciding to do what I did. What I'd like to perhaps through this conversation, Nick, my brother, is ask you just to make an inquiry as to whether you might have tried this one trick that I found in my book, this one method that I came across. I mean, you know, because I'm not sure, perhaps this is one thing that you didn't come across. And of course, that is why you have come looking for me. That is why you have asked me, is there any advice that can be offered? So I'd like to share with you, Nick, what I tried. What I tried when I, just as you, began to see that life was not just all fun and tickety-boo. that there was in fact a lot of suffering, that there is a lot of sorrow, a lot of grief, a lot of pain, torment, and life can be a horror show. You'll be glad to know that I have felt about life the same way as you do. And you may perhaps have felt that every day is the same. Through my experience and study and living the Dhamma, guess what? I've come to learn that it's not just every day. Every rise and fall of a thought contains within itself sorrow, grief, pain, and in fact it is indeed a horror show. So first things first. You have been able to realize something that not many people are able to. And for that, mate, give yourself a pat on the back. You have no idea how lucky you are, how fortunate you are. In fact, I'll go even further, how wise you are. To be able to penetrate that veil of pleasure, it's only a superficial veil, it's not true. And to have realized that life can be full of sorrow and it can be a horror show. I wish more people did. I wish we had more necks. You may recall the story of the Prince Siddhartha who went on to become the Buddha. His father, so I'm trying to show you how wise men are like. Right? His father, the great king, Suddhodana, tried every trick in the book to prevent his young son, this young prince, from realizing that this world is full of suffering. You have no idea to what length, to what extent he tried this. All old people, sick people, poor people, they were banned from the cities. Because there was a prophecy. Because some people said, the prophet said, that his son would go on to become a wheel-turning monarch. So that's a very powerful king, in simple words. Or that he would renounce life. You see the connection here? That he would renounce life one day, having realized that all of this is just suffering, that there is no real joy to be had in this mirage that others try to paint in front of our eyes. And he would renounce all of this and go on to find a much deeper, a much more superior state of mind where he would put all of that suffering to an end. So his father tried every trick in the book. He consulted his ministers, his advisors, and he went to great lengths. He banished people from the poor people, sick people, elderly people. They were not allowed. So every time the prince would take an excursion around the kingdom, all of these poor, sick and elderly people, prior to the prince's visit, would be removed from the streets. Can you imagine that? He actually went to that land. He would send his troops prior to the prince's visit, and he would remove all of those people from the streets. to make it appear to the young prince that everyone was just young, healthy, you know, with the means to survive, and everyone was well off, and everyone was happy. And people would just be laughing and smiling. I would even imagine, you know, if the king ever got to know that someone, two people, got into a fight, a brawl, in the prince's presence, he probably would have summoned them to the palace, the king's court, and have them punished. Why? Because he wanted the prince to think that this world was full of joy and pleasure and happiness, and that there was no suffering in this world. But hey, Nick, just like you, this prince, he was a very wise man. It wasn't that easy to hide the truth from him. He was about to become the Buddha, right? Of course, he was a wise man. So actually, thinking about it, people who think like that, they go on to become great people. I wonder what's in store for you. So the story goes that on one fine day, the prince wanted to make an excursion around the kingdom, and the king, as per protocol, arranged for all poor, sick and elderly people to be removed from the streets. However, three people, somehow managed to remain. Just three. It is even said that it was one of the gods, the Sakradeva, who manifested himself and appeared as a sick man, a poor man, and a dead man. But whether that is true or not, I don't want to woo you, right? Whether that is true or not, three people remained in the kingdom. So the king was unable to remove everyone. Three slipped through his fingers. So what happened? Prince Siddhartha got on his chariot with his trusted friend and charioteer, and as they went round the kingdom, the prince spotted an old man, and he was shocked. Having spotted this old man, he asked his charioteer, his name was Channa. He said, "Channa, stop. He said, "What is that?" I'd imagine that's how he would have asked the question. Not who is that, but rather, he probably would have asked, "What is that?" Why did he ask that? Because that is how much he was isolated from the poor, sick and elderly by his king, by his father the king, that when he saw this elderly man, this old man, he couldn't recognize that actually they're human beings just like him, just like he was. So he asked Channa, "Who's that?" And Channa said, "Well, Your Majesty, that is an old man." And the prince goes, "A what? An old man? What's an old man?" So in today's words, he would have said, "Duh." So yeah, in those days he said, "Well, yeah, I mean, you can't say duh to the prince. That would be the last time you say something like that." So he said, he would have said something like, "Well, prince, I'm sorry to inform you that everyone grows old." And then the prince asks, "What do you mean everyone? Surely I'm not going to grow old. Look at that man. He looks ugly." And Channa said, I'm afraid, yes, my lord. My prince, you will also one day grow old, just like that man. It's going to happen to all of us. Are you telling me that one day I will lose my vitality, my youth, my power, my prowess, and I'll be an old man like him, weak and frail and fragile, without even being able to keep my back straight? And Channa, the charioteer, said, of course, my lord, happens to the best of us. Blimey. The king, the prince is shocked. So he carries on, contemplating about this. And he's thinking to himself, but hang on, I thought the world was full of joy and happiness and pleasure and beauty and glory. What's this? I've never seen something like this before. What's this? An old man. I've never come across this before. Why did my father never mention this? My teachers, no one ever mentioned this to me, that this is going to happen to me. But why not? So he's thinking to himself. He knows his father loves him a lot. So, but why did my father not divulge this to me? Why did he keep this a secret? So further down the road, he sees another unusual sight. Something he'd never seen before. And here was a sick man. A very sick man. Coughing. Probably spewing out blood. Very sick. Trembling. Fever. Shivering. Crying for help. And then again he asks his trusted charioteer, Channa, what's that? Well, sire, that of course is a sick man, sir. A what man? A sick man, sir. A sick man. What's a sick man? Sir, it's when you become ill. It happens to the best of us. You become weak then. You fall on your knees. You fall on the ground, you fall flat. You won't be able to fend for yourself then. You'll need to have people attend to you and help you, feed you, wash you, clean you, feed, and do everything. Look after you until you're recovered. So, this happens to everyone? Surely not me. And Channa goes, I'm sorry to be the bringer of bad news, my lord, but yes, and please don't shoot the messenger. I would have said that. Because this is terrible news. Imagine that, the prince growing up for 20 odd years, right, thinking that there was not such a thing as suffering. There was no such thing as old age or becoming ill. He probably didn't even contract to some such thing as even a common cold, I imagine. Not even a headache. It's not hard to believe that, given that, you know, we're talking about a young prince who has shed loads of merit. Right? So, possible. It's possible. I mean, difficult. It's difficult, but it's possible. It's not entirely impossible. So, having seen this sight, the prince was shocked again. He was shocked to the core. He was very shocked. And he's thinking to himself, but hang on. But my life is different to this. I've got riches, I've got wealth, I'm about to become king soon. And I've got everything I could ever ask for. I'm youthful, I have power. I'm the best at everything there is. Whenever there's a competition, whenever I'm in the arena. I'm always the winner, I'm the best, I'm the greatest. But what if something like that happens to me? If something like that were to happen to me, I'd be on my knees just as much as that man there. Not able to fend for myself? What a terrible state that must be. The young prince thinks to himself. Now he's double shocked. Right? So this is the second sight he's had that has really shaken his belief in the life that he envisaged he would have for himself. And they carry on. As they carry on, unfortunately, from the king's perspective, but truly, fortunately, from our perspective, otherwise we wouldn't have had a Buddha. Imagine that. No Buddha? Sends a shiver down my spine. So, the third sight was a dead man. Now, did the prince know what this was? Of course not. He'd never seen a dead man before. So he didn't know what dead was. So he asked Channa, why are those people carrying that man on a bed on their shoulders? Like, what's wrong with him? Is he just lazy? Why can't he just carry his own weight around? What are these people like? He probably thought to himself. And then Channa broke the news to him. Well, my lord, that man... Gone are the days when that man could get off the bed and walk and carry his own weight on his own two legs. Gone are those days, sire. How come? Is he also a sick man? He's no sick man, sir. He's a bit more than sick. That is a dead man. A what man? That's a dead man. You mean like a Batman? No, you wouldn't have said that. But a dead man. What's a dead man? Dead as in dead. You know, dead is obvious to you and I, but it wasn't to the prince because he didn't know the concept of what dead was. What does it mean to be dead? It's when you're no longer, sir. So all the things around you, right, your parents, your siblings, this palace, the kingdom, and everything you love, everything you enjoy, everything you like, everything that makes you happy today, all of that will be lost in but a second. At that, there's going to be a moment one day in your life, sir, when that moment comes, that's it. Like the lights go off. Your life goes off. You'll be dead as dead. And that happens to everyone, Channa? Well, yes, sir. If you're alive, it happens to you. It will happen to you. Surely there must be some way my father can prevent that from happening to me. He loves me. I mean, come on. He's the king. He's the all-powerful ruler of this country. Surely my father can prevent that. I can't believe you. Well, guess what, sir? Your father will also be dead one day. Are you kidding me? Asked the prince. No, sir. Your father will be dead one day. Your wife will be dead one day. If you were to have children one day, they shall also be dead. Little do they know that pretty soon he's going to find out that he's got a son. As soon as they return to the palace. So, his wife was pregnant at this time. So, your child will also one day be dead, and I even myself, sir, your best friend, your trusted charioteer, I, sir, too, will one day be dead. So you mean after you're dead, you and I won't be able to meet each other again? We won't be able to have fun like this? Go around, travel the kingdom, and talk about all the lovely things that we get to? We won't be able to do that again? Sir, what part of dead do you not get? Well, of course, the prince didn't know what dead was, so... Not a lot really, Channa, Prince Siddhartha would have said. Unfortunately, sir, dead is dead. Now you're dead as a brick once you're dead. That's it. That's the end of the story. Chapter close. Blimey. Now, that was a hat trick. The prince couldn't take no more. Three in a row. An old man, a sick man, a dead man. Good Lord, what else? What next? The prince would have thought to himself. Could it get any worse than this? Well, on the contrary, just as it got as worst as it could be, up next was the best thing that he could have hoped to see. So what did he see next? Up next, he saw a hermit, a monk, a man in a robe, with something that resembled an alms bowl, walking, very calm, very serene, looking down, bold-headed. Clearly he was not a Buddhist monk. There were no Buddhist monks back then. There wasn't even a Buddha. So, there wasn't a Buddhist monk. But again, as the story says, it was the Sakra, the god Sakra, who manifested himself. But again, you know, be that the truth or not, there was a man. There was a man who was a hermit. And so, again, the prince hadn't seen anyone like this before. So he asked Channa, oh Channa, hold on. Who's that man? He's very different to all the men I've seen in my life, including the last three. I thought the next one would be even worse. But this man is very, very different. Look at him. He's so calm. Like nothing in this world could bother him. Like even if the whole world exploded, he'd be cool as a cucumber. Look at him. So calm, so serene, so collected. He's just so cool. Who's that, Channa? And then Channa says, well, my sir, your honor, I thought you'd never ask. My majesty, that sir is someone who, having realized that this world is full of suffering, that this world is full of sorrow, and that this world is just a horror show, makes a firm resolve, makes a determination, thinks to himself, enough is enough. I want no more to be part of this. I don't want any of this suffering. I want to free myself from suffering, and there must be a way. There must be a way. He looks at all the people in the world with plenty of wealth, youth, power, property, richness, riches, gold, and everything. And he thinks to himself, but all these people, no matter what they have, no matter what they possess, they're all destined for old age, sickness, and death. So what's the point? All hopes and dreams of big and grand things, in the end, this just amounts to nothing. So all of these things that are done in the name of happiness, in the name of achieving a satisfaction, a fulfillment to life, doesn't amount to much. So, I must find another way. I must find another path. I must find a way to free myself. And what do? They renounce. They renounce the age-old way of life, a lay life, a mundane life. And settling for very little, a robe and an alms bowl, they set forth. They go looking for the truth. They go looking for answers. They go looking for happiness. What you see there, sir, Your Majesty, is a hermit. He is what we call a monk. I imagine the prince would have been elated, over the moon, because what he'd just seen were three sights that he'd never seen before, things that shook him to the core. His mind was a minefield. All these questions, he was tormented because he'd just seen that the world is full of sorrow, full of grief, and no matter what you do, no matter what you try, in the end it's just going to be all suffering. No one's really happy in the end. No one's really happy in the end. Because when everything you've worked hard for, in the end amounts to nothing. Amounts to nothing and leaves you nothing and really leaves you as dead as a log, then what's the point? Why are we doing all this? All these enterprises, all these adventures, all these pursuits, what do they amount to? Nothing. So what's the point? He's asking himself. And then, boy, was he glad to have beheld this sight, to have come across someone. It was this idea that really he was looking for, because there was a problem. Now he needed a solution. There was a big problem. So you can imagine in his mind, the cogs in his mind turning left, right, center, trying to work this out. Well, you know, I thought life was like this, but really life is like this. It's a completely different story. Why didn't they tell me all this up until now? How come my father kept this a secret from me all these years? 20 odd long years in my life and they kept it a secret. 28 long years they kept it a secret. How come they never told me about this? But I know my father loves me. I'm the apple of his eye. But why? So he's wondering, is all these questions tormenting him, torturing him? And he was glad that he found an answer. He found an answer in that monk. So as Chan explained to him, this is what people do. When they realize at some point in their life, so you can take this in a metaphorical sense, when people realize at some point in their life, and only the wise do this, Nick. Only the wise. Because people who lack in wisdom, they go through the run of the mill. They go through the same churn every day. And they're just fooled by the veil of ignorance. They see a false pleasure, like the carrot that sticks in front of the donkey and keeps it moving forward, but never is it going to taste that carrot. It's a meaningless task, but that sight of the carrot, the promise of the carrot, keeps moving the donkey forward. It's a donkey, remember? Just like that. Most people in this world, the carrot of sensual pleasures, the falsehood of joy, happiness and richness, riches and wealth and all that, all the things that people today think bring them happiness, that carrot, once stuck to the donkey just keeps moving forward. Never does it stop to think, hang on a second, how long have I been doing this? All my life. And have I ever tasted this carrot? No. Why? Because it's a donkey, that's why. But wise people among them, who are very few and far between, they look at life differently. They realize that behind this veil of pleasure, this veil of ignorance, the truth is that life is full of sorrow. There's a big black bowl of suffering. And I'll use your own words, it's a horror show. The prince realized that. And he was glad that he found an answer. He realized, if I renounce this life, which keeps me entrapped in this mirage of joy and pleasure, I must be able to then go and find answers. Because for as long as I remain here, my father is going to continue to keep me blind to reality. He's not going to cut me any slack. If I go and ask these questions of him, he's not going to give me any answers that I'm going to be satisfied with. I can pretty much imagine and work out what he's up to now. Because you know, he's an intelligent man, the prince. He was just not exposed to the reality. Had he been, he would have worked this out. Whereas you and I, Nick, we saw life. We saw life as it comes. We saw the ups and downs in life. We saw the sick, elderly and the old, and the dead. We had to face problems. We went through problems. You and I, we've been through a lot of the same problems. So, we realize that life is not really too kind on us. And then we started to look for answers. It takes a very wise man to first spot that suffering, to spot the sorrow, to spot the grief. And then it takes a very wise man to spot the right answer. You require so much wisdom for that. But usually, one who realizes this by oneself, we call a Buddha. Because realizing this by oneself without the help of a teacher, without advice or guidance or direction, as you have asked for, one who does that all by himself, there's only one like that. And that's the Buddha. One who can understand it, realize it, and teach it to others. There's only one like that. The rest of us, all of us, if we are wise enough, we can see the problem. But for an answer, we have to turn to those who are wiser than us. Our teachers. The sages. Wise men. And aren't we glad that we have people like that among us? So just as you have reached out asking for any advice or direction, I did once in my life. I reached out, asking for advice, guidance, and direction. And just as you received this today, Nick, I did, once, from a great man. He gave me guidance. He gave me direction. He showed me the path. He showed me how to wake up. From this horror show. So, I want to offer to you another option. Because your conclusion as to what you have decided to pursue as a solution to the problem tells me that you have not seen all the cards yet. And I don't want that. I want you to have all of the options before you make your decision. Because you deserve it. Because you're my brother from another mother. You deserve it. Heck, you got me to do a video sermon. Never done one of these before. This is the first for me. You are someone very special. So, someone very special deserves all of the options. I want you to have all the options before you make your decision. Your decision is yours, as my decision was mine. We are all responsible for our own actions. And by that, what is meant is, we must live by the consequences of our own actions. If we make the right decisions, then we will reap the rewards of our own actions. However, if we make the wrong decisions, we will have to suffer. Sometimes, if we make a wrong decision, as a solution to a pre-existing problem, that one wrong decision can make matters, the problem, 10, 100, 1,000, 1,000,000 times worse. It could be like jumping from the pan to the fire. And I don't want you to do that. Because you deserve the best. You got me to do a video sermon, Nick. You deserve the best. You got the best out of me. You deserve the best out of life. You deserve every option to be laid out in front of you. I'm saying, listen to what I have to say before you make up your mind. I agree. Life is full of sorrow. That's the saying. You're a wise man. You're a wise man, my friend. At the age of 2, 3, you figured this out. It took me 10 times as long as you did to work out this. What are you doing there? You should be here. Took me 10 times as long for me to figure out what you have figured out. So you figured out the problem. Well done. Next, we need to figure out the answer. That is just as important, isn't it? Now, I'm also very impressed by the fact that you are very open. You're a very open-minded individual. I mean, some of the things that you've said, my gosh, it just shows that, you know, because I can imagine for you to come to the conclusion that you have, right? Life probably has been quite difficult on you. There would have been, I'm sure, there must have been some tough times. And in spite of all that, your insightful approach to life, the way you look at life, your perspectives, the way you're open-minded to solutions, that is really something. Not everyone's like that, mate. Not everyone's like that. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what the heck you're doing in Australia, in USA. You've got to be here, man. You've got to be here among us to talk to people who have not yet realized what you have about life. You've got to be here. You've got to be here to open people's eyes, to speak to the youth of today who live in a veil of darkness. And without the association of good, kind-hearted, generous, wise people, like your good self, they may end up making wrong decisions. And unfortunately, whoever makes the wrong decision has to suffer the consequences, not their neighbor. And look at these words. I don't think anyone truly understands what this world is or how it works. Do you know how deep that statement is? That's exactly what the Tripitaka says. If you don't know what the Tripitaka is, that is the book that contains the doctrine of the Buddha. It is the most sacred book to us Buddhists. It says, well, it's what you say, but it's what the book says, that no one truly understands what the world is or how it works. And I know you're not quoting the book. These are your own words. As I'm saying, you're a very wise man. You're a very wise man, Nick. Therefore, you deserve all the options made available to you before you make your mind up. Because you're someone who is open-minded and you're someone who can be shown facts. And once you see the truth, once you see the reasoning, the logic behind it, you're someone who is intelligent enough to accept it and acknowledge it. Whereas there are fools around this world. There's more of them than there is of you, unfortunately. The fools in this world, they're just stuck in their old ways. Not willing to budge, not willing to listen, not willing to consider, not willing to change, if you listen to last week's sermon. They're not willing to change. It's my way, and that's the only way. I don't care what you have to say, it's my way. I know it, and I know it best. No one knows better than I do. Some fools in this world, this is what they say. But you, sir, are not like that. Even in the midst of all of the, I imagine, hardship that must have come your way in life, the various ups and downs, in the state of mind that you are contemplating, at this moment in time, for you to be willing to consider a different perspective, a different point of view. Will you agree with me that you are a special guy? You are truly remarkable. And you even have your reasonings for that. You say, how it works, just simply due to the fact that we are all limited humans with a biased and filtered perception of this existence. Oh my God, man, you have no idea how deep and profound that sentence. You should be a monk. You should preach. You should be talking to these people. You should be talking to the youth of today. You should be talking to people who are blinded by ignorance. You have no idea how much truth there is in those words. We are limited humans with a biased and filtered perception of this existence. You have spoken the truth and nothing but the truth. In every sense of the word, that is the truth. So much so that there is, you know, this statement is so profound and so deep. My teacher has asked me not to go this far in explaining the Dhamma to people on an online audience or through a distant, you know, something like an online sermon, where they're not really sat in front and you can't explain to them, you can't see their body language, you can't see whether they've understood this or not. Because this is so deep, so profound. And you're so right. Our filtered and biased perception of existence prevents us from seeing the truth. And so you don't disbelieve rebirth. How could you? There's no way you can disbelieve rebirth when you are so open-minded and when, you know, your wisdom reaches as far as saying things like, or contemplating things like, biased and filtered perceptions of existence. One day if you and I meet, hopefully, maybe, one day, it would be nice to meet my brother from another mother, one day. One day, I'd like to sit you down. There are 54 books in the Tripitaka. Discourses in total are contained within these books. 84,000. Believe you me, Nick, each and every one of those 84,000 discourses were delivered by the Lord Buddha to explain this very point. People like you should be around me to serve humanity. People like you should be with us, should be around us to help people who don't have the wisdom to penetrate ignorance and realize the truth. You know, you've shared with me your personal opinion without even having listened to a sermon. I don't know. Maybe you are a regular listener. I don't know. Maybe you came across the sermons by the off chance. I don't know. But, you know, for someone to say these words and really mean them, I that is something else, man. That is something else. And besides, at the age of 29, you only just started life. My teachers tell me that until you reach the age of 40, don't even think that you're an adult. You've got to wait at least until you're 40 to consider yourself an adult, my teacher tells me. I'm hoping I never become one. But hey, apparently people grow old. But at the age of 29, for you to be able to contemplate these ideas and your own thoughts and all this, you know, in while you are immersed in the vicissitudes and the predicaments that life has thrown at you, man, you're special. You're special. You really are. So yeah, reincarnation could be a possibility. I agree with you. I agree with you, it could be a possibility. You know, I'm a man of science, and by the sound of it, you are too. I just get the feeling that you and I, we've met each other before. I don't know. I don't know why, I just get that feeling. You know, just when I just... even before I read the whole thing, I saw the name, USA, 29, male, single. Something, I don't know, I just felt something weird. Something I'd not felt before. Something told me, I know this guy. So, as much as I'm a man of science, sounds like you are too. Meaning, you look at the world through a scientific lens, and that's the way to do it. That is how you ought to do it. Science will one day catch up with Buddhism. One day. It will. That might take a while, but it'll be a good thing for mankind, for humanity, if science can one day catch up with Buddhism. But in the meantime, even without the solid evidence, the solid proof, you're telling me that you don't believe, you don't disbelieve in something that cannot be seen through your eyes. Now, particularly for someone coming from, you'll forgive me for saying this, you know, your background. You know, because usually for someone, if you were someone who was born into a Buddhist family, right, and had a grandmother like mine, who always told me what, you know, how I'm going to go to the hell if I do something bad, especially if I raise my voice with her. If you are someone who had a grandmother like mine, then, you know, I can understand why you would believe in reincarnation. But for someone who comes from your background, now I know I'm making a swooping assumption here. Who knows, maybe your grandmother is a Buddhist. I don't know. But assuming that you've not been exposed to a lot of Buddhism, a lot, for you to not disbelieve the concept of rebirth is quite something. But here's the thing. Let me address that point first. Okay. Let's for the argument's sake. Let's assume that rebirth exists, as in rebirth is real, right? So, unless you attain a state of mind where you have been able to see rebirth, rebirth happens. So once you die, you're born. This rebirth, where you're going to be reborn, how you're going to be reborn, what you're going to be when you're reborn, right? All of these things has to be determined by something, right? It has to be determined by something. I mean, there has to be some cause or a bunch of causes which determine these results. Because I'm sure you'll accept the principle of cause and effect. Causes determine the effect. So, what might these causes be? What might be the causes that determine where one is to be reborn? As what? So, for instance, say a man dies, are they always reborn human? Is it possible that a man dies and is reborn an animal? Or maybe a spirit, a demon? Is it? Or even a god, a deva, or a brahma? Is that possible? So what determines that? I mean, even if we were to assume that if a man were to die, he's always going to be reborn a man, then again there have to be causes for that. Why is that? Because causes will always should be able to explain why something is the way it is and why it is not something else. Both these things. Once you understand the causes properly and fully, you should be able to answer both these questions. One, why is it the way it is? And why is it not another way? So, it is not sufficient for us to say that a man is reborn a man, or a human is reborn a human, and that is just because it is the way it is. You need to be able to say, these are the causes why a man is reborn a man. Or, if we are to accept that it could be anything, then what are the causes for that? Before we jump into rebirth, Nick, don't you have good days and bad days? I mean, everybody does, right? Good days and bad days. There are days when we feel so happy and, you know, just like on top of the world, and we feel as though we are saints on days like that. And we're so kind to other people, like nothing in this world could take away, steal our happiness. We feel so sympathetic towards others, and we're very apologetic for our mistakes. We feel so compassionate towards others, and we always want to, you know, we feel like, you know, we have an abundance of love and affection to share with others. You know, there are days like that. And then there are days where the smallest thing could upset you. Right? Those bad hair days. Sometimes our most loved ones, those among our most loved ones, maybe spouses or children, brother, sister, friends, best of friends, right? Sometimes even the people that we know and trust are normally only a source of joy and happiness to us, can, on those bad days, on these days that we call bad days, right? They could be pretty annoying, couldn't they? And they could turn us into a devil. Right? What sort of devil? Not physically, but, you know, angry. They can make us feel evil. They can make us feel wicked. And sometimes we are very scornful on days like that. We bite, metaphorically. Sometimes we snap very easily. There are days like that. Right? So, now, why am I saying this? I want you to think about this. You're an intelligent guy. I want you to think about this thing. How come the same person can be these two extremes on, sometimes or even on the same day? It could be. Sometimes another day, sometimes the same day, right? In the morning, you're feeling on top of the world, you're feeling like you're Mahatma Gandhi, right? And then, in the evening, someone upsets you, and you want to blow the world up with an atom bomb, right? There are days that people might feel like that. So how is it the same person can feel both these ways on the same day? What changed? Can you see that in the morning, although this is a human being, this is a man, this is a person, he's feeling very divine. He's feeling very godly, very generous, right? All the qualities, all the attributes of, you know, higher spiritual beings. Whereas in the evening, if it was something that happened in the evening, something upsetting, something terrible, something really annoying, that has made you angry, right, then those events can bring the onset of emotions which are very negative, which are very detrimental to one's well-being as well as that of others. Now that is not very highly spiritual. Now, these are not feelings and emotions felt by the highly spiritual. They are felt by evil and wicked beings. Very low states of mind. Almost animalistic. Like a ferocious dog or a lion. Beast. Don't feel God, feel beast. So in the morning you feel like beauty, in the evening you feel like beast. That can happen in the course of the same day. Now what is it that determines that? Let's figure out what happens after you're dead and in your rebirth later. But what happens in the same day? What determines this? What really determines this? This change in one's nature? This change in one's demeanor. What has been the main cause of this? You'll agree with me, Nick, that this is the state of mind, isn't it? It's the way you think. That is the way you are. What you think is what you are. I know that is so cliche, but it is the truth. What you think is what you are. What you think is what you become. What you think is what you are. Because in the morning, the way you responded to the events of the outside world was different to how you respond to things in the outside world in the evening. I'm talking about an example here. Right? Say you know, it's a nice day, beautiful day, you wake up, we look outside and the sun's rising, right? Nice weather. You feel very positive, very upbeat about the day. Okay, and then say, I'm just taking an example here, right? Say a guy's got kids, and the kid comes running into the bedroom, and says, "Daddy, daddy, daddy!" And he comes and hangs on the guy's leg, and says, come and play with me, Daddy, please come and play with me. Oh, all right, come on, then let's go. So you're feeling very positive, right? Anything, there's nothing that could really upset you. Whereas, let's say you've been to work and it's been a terrible day, the boss wants to sack you, right? And all the business, it's all failing, things are all going terrible, right? And there's a recession coming, and on the way, someone bumped into you, right? And now your car's in the garage, you don't know how to get to work the following day, right? There are bills to be paid. So when all these things now start to impact you, now say you get home and your little kid comes running to you and tries to hang on your leg and go, Daddy, Daddy, come and play with me. Oh, just give me a break, man. Go and trouble your mother. I'm far too busy. Don't bring this on me now. I just need some time to relax. Just go. See, same event, but a different response. The outcome was determined not by the event, but the outcome was determined by the response. And that response is a wholly mental manifestation. So, in the course of the same day, whereas in the morning, the same event received one response, that same event in the evening got a different, very entirely different response from this person. So, in the morning they're feeling very godly, and in the evening they're feeling very, very wicked, very animalistic, very vile, angry, not very positive, very negative. So, really, this is a human being, but in this human being, as the mental emotions and the thought processes have changed, we see a very different person in the morning to who we see in the evening. So you see, even within one lifetime, let alone a lifetime, even within the same day, you are what you think. You are your thoughts. You are the way you respond to events. That's pretty clear, isn't it? So if you are your thoughts, if you are how you think, then, and that we can see has been proved in the course of one day, if you take this forward to that last moment of your life, right? And assuming that rebirth exists, your thoughts will determine what you become. Because it did, in the course of one day. Because in the morning you are very lovey-lovey, but in the evening, you know, the last thing that people ought to do is come and trouble you. It's best to leave you alone. That's what, you know, mommy says, right? For the son, just leave daddy alone. Right? Let him be. He's something's wrong. He needs some time. He's not himself today. Why? The thought process has changed. Not feeling very positive. Your thoughts have changed. The way you think has changed. So, the same principle, don't you think, could apply in the last moments of life and where you're going to be reborn, what you're going to be reborn as, and how the whole thing should happen? I'm giving you a very, very brief and very high level introduction, if you like, to this concept of what might rebirth be like, where might one go and be reborn, and as what? And how must we think about that? What is the science behind it? Because if the concept applies in the course of a day-to-day life, why mustn't the concept apply in the last moments of life? Because you see, what is death after all? What is death after all? Death is simply the separation of mind and body. I want you to start to think about it in those terms. Death is the separation of mind and body. That's all it is. So, what happens to the body once the mind is separated from it? Well, we've seen what happens to the body once the mind leaves it. Right? It's taken to fill graveyards. And it turns into soil, eventually. Into the very elements that went into making it. That's what happens to the body when the mind leaves it. But what happens to the mind when it leaves the body? We know now, don't we, that the mind is a warehouse for thoughts. It's the place where thoughts arise and pass away. Right? So, thoughts arise and pass away in the mind. And each thought as it passes away creates the environment for the next thought to arise and so on. Now, this is a little bit deep, but hey, I'm talking to Nick. Look at the things he said to me. But anyone can understand this. Even a kid can understand this. So thoughts arise and pass away in the mind, right? We know this. How do we know this? But I say, think about the sun, and now you're thinking about the sun. And I say, think about a tree, and now you're thinking about a tree. Now you're not thinking about the sun, you're thinking about a tree. How does that happen? Well, thoughts arise and pass away. In the first thought, when I said think about the sun, those thoughts are thinking about the sun. That is what they have as their focus, their focal point. And then I say the tree, you're thinking about the tree. It's not the same thought, it's a different thought. So thoughts arise and pass away in the mind, each thought grasping an object. We've talked about this in the past. So none of this is new to you, not a new concept, and it's very simple to understand. So this process happens all the way throughout life and also in the last moment. That last thought that arises in the mind, right? Whether that is a natural death or a self-inflicted death, right? I'll use the word suicide. Whether it's natural or self-inflicted, if ultimately what death is, whether that is brought upon oneself or comes to you naturally, death is ultimately the separation of mind and body. You can't do anything else to die. I mean, nothing else happens when you die other than the mind separates from the body. That is what happens when you die. Mind is separated from the body. So we know what happens to the body. So what happens to the mind? For the very reason that thoughts continue to arise in that mind, up until now, thoughts will continue to arise in that mind. Why would they not? Why should thoughts stop arising in that mind? What is the reason? Because if the mind and body are two separate entities, yes, they are dependent on each other, yes, that is all right, yeah, but they are separate nevertheless. It's like a husband and wife. They are independent, but they depend on each other. In much the same way, the mind and body are independent, but they depend on each other. But it's like a divorce. When the husband and wife are separated, what happens? They can go on to find a separate partner if they wish. Or they can remain single. So imagine the wife decides to stay single, but the husband decides to go and remarry. now in much the same way, the body stays single. Meaning, the body just awaits natural decomposition. And the elements will look after that, time will look after that. But what the mind does, it goes and remarries. It finds another body. So when I say finds another body, it doesn't go looking for another body in the in the mortuary, or in a cemetery, or a fully grown developed body. A body does not have to be big. I mean, your body wasn't big when your mind first appeared in it, did it? Was it? It's not as big as it was today. It is today. It was a tiny cell, a couple of cells, a bunch of cells. It was an embryo when the mind first appeared in it. So you see, the body does not have to be big. What about single-celled animals? The body doesn't have to be big. The mind just needs the body. So, leaving the science bit to aside for a moment, the mind is just going to go and remarry, like the husband from the previous marriage, divorced and gone and got married to another woman, and now he's married. The mind just goes and settles down in another body. And for the very same reason that thoughts arose previously in the previous body, now thoughts continue to arise in this mind. However, we mustn't forget this, the point we discussed earlier. The nature of one's mind is determined by the thoughts. So, the problem with a self-inflicted death, in other words, a suicide, is usually it is done with a great sense of remorse, anger, self-pity. Sometimes even hatred. All of these emotions are very negative. All of these emotions are detrimental to one's happiness. So, as the new thoughts arise, the new thoughts, or the new thought arises, and its nature is one with negativity, anger, hatred, and so on, rebirth takes place in a similar place, in a place that is fitting to the above description. So it is not going to be in a lovely, happy, beautiful place, but rather it's going to be in a dark, wicked, angry, dangerous place. A very negative place, not a positive place. Now, any wise man should be able to put two and two together here and work out, do hell and heaven exist, and could rebirth take place in such places? You should be able to now work out the logic. I'm simplifying this way too much, is how I feel, is what I feel, but for the purpose of this discourse, this sermon, I am doing it purposefully. So I'm leaving out a lot of the detail, but I'm just giving you something to think about, enough for you to think about, I suppose is the best way of putting it. So, you know, it's virtually impossible for someone to feel positive when they commit suicide. It's not something that someone does happily, is it? They don't feel very positive. It's with sorrow and anger and distrust, resentment, remorse, right? All these negative thoughts and emotions completely cripple the mind. And it is at that point that one takes one's life. Now, you know, so the mind has taken a very negative shape at this point. And therefore, where the mind is going to arise in the next reincarnation is determined by this. Therefore, it's not going to be in a lovely place, it's not going to be in a nice place. It's going to be in a very dark place. Now, those who have developed their samadhi, their supernatural powers, have seen what happens to a lot of people who take their own life. Because it's a very fierce, very strong state of mind, although negative, a very tormented, a mind that is fixated on a single idea of self-harm. It's very difficult to take the mind on a different avenue, to sort of get the mind to think else, something else. And the mind is fixed on that idea. So what happens then is, in this new place of rebirth, that doesn't change, because after all, for a problem with the mind, all you have done is you have broken the body. I mean, how else does one commit suicide? Because you can't sort of take your mind from this body and put it into another body, can you? So the only thing you can do to separate mind and body is to break the body. By break the body, I mean to terminate whatever energy that is within this body that keeps the mind in its place. So, could be poison. It could be hanging yourself. It could be stabbing yourself, shooting yourself. So in some way, taking out one of the vital functions of this body. Therefore, no longer is the body a suitable place, an appropriate place, or a place that can sustain the mind. Now what happens? The mind has to leave the body. So, really, what people do when they commit suicide is they inflict harm on the body. Now, unfortunately, the problem with this is the problem was never with the body, was it? Sometimes people can get into breakups, right? And what they do is then they go and jump in front of a train. What a pity, because this is for a mental problem, you're taking a physical solution. It's as if there's a problem with your left arm and you're treating your right arm. What good is that going to do? So the mental torture, the mental problem continues to remain. That's the problem. It shall remain. All that has changed is different body, but the mind will still have the same problem. So, whatever reason it was that prompted one to take one's life, be that anger, resentment, remorse, or hatred towards oneself or someone else, right, or whatever, vicissitudes of life, whatever predicament you're in, whatever situation that has prompted you to do it, right, that mental agony, that mental torture, that mental frustration, that does not change, because that is caused by attachment, which is caused by ignorance. Ignorance and attachment cannot be simply removed by shifting the mind from one body to another. If that were the case, once you're dead, you're dead. If that were the case, then you wouldn't need a Buddha. Because if ignorance and attachment are going to be taken out as soon as the mind is separated from the body, then that's it. Then you have an arahant there, a fully enlightened being. Or at least a fully enlightened mind. And that will not take rebirth anyway. But that doesn't work like that. How can ignorance be taken out by simply shifting the mind from arising in one body to another body? How does that work? You know, because everything has to have a cause. Ladies and gentlemen, you understand that, right? Things don't just happen. You know, we have to take a scientific approach. Otherwise, as Nick says, you know, that will be a thing. They just happen. Just like that. You can't think that. I mean, I'm the last person who will sign up for that class. I want logic. I want reason. I want how things work. I want to know how things hang together. I'll only accept it then. Normally, I'll only accept it then if I can see the logic behind it. At least it has to be plausible. I don't have to fully understand it, but at least it has to be plausible. That's why I don't like all that nonsense about, I don't know, you know. No, I won't say that. Don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. You know, some beliefs and ideas about what happens after death, it's just, they just don't seem plausible because there's no reason, rhyme or reason behind it. And it just seems to be someone else's wish, someone else's, at someone else's whim and fancy. Something seems to happen to me just because that's how they want it. I just don't buy that. Personally, I just don't buy that. But I'm happy to accept that what happens to me is a result of my own actions. That I'm happy to accept. I don't like the feeling of helplessness. I don't like the feeling of what can I do? Because then there's no responsibility. There's nothing to do. There's nothing not to do. I mean, what's the point of living like that? What a sad, sorry life that is. I want to take responsibility for my own life, for my own actions. Now, if I made the wrong choices, then I'm happy to, I'm willing, I can't say I'm happy, but I'm willing to accept the consequences. If I made the right choices, then I expect the rewards for that. Is there anything wrong with that? If you work hard for an exam, don't you expect to get good marks? Otherwise, why do you work hard studying for an exam? If it's someone else's wish, whether you pass or not, let them make their wish. Why are you working hard? Why are you studying for your exam? That's what I'm saying. You know, all of that just sounds nonsensical to me. So I believe in cause and effect, and it seems the only plausible way to explain this phenomenon that happens in and around me. So for a mental problem to seek a physical solution seems meaningless. If the problem is with the body, let's fix the body. If the problem is with the mind, let's fix the mind. And with Nick speaking of sorrow and that feeling of that life is just a horror show, you know, all of these, I believe, Nick, are sentiments that are mental. Is it not, my friend? Physically, there's no complaint that you have mentioned here. Seem to be okay. So, why seek a physical solution to a mental problem? There's a fire over here. Shall we bring the fire extinguishers and start putting out the fire over there? You up for that? If I'm hungry, are you willing to eat on my behalf? If you're hungry, what good is it with me eating on your behalf? I think you get the gist. Where the problem exists, excuse me, that's where we should find an answer. So, when the problem is a mental one, then the answer, the solution should be a mental solution. If the problem is physical, then we can take a physical solution. In order for one to commit suicide, the only thing that is possible is to break the body. Yes or no? It is to inflict damage on a vital organ of the body and therefore to take away its possibility to sustain an environment in which the mind can continue to function. And that's when the mind and body are separated. But does that take away the mental problem? Listen to me and listen to me closely. Not one bit. I was going to say, those who have developed their spiritual powers, who are able to see what happens to people who have committed suicide, what they tell us, and one day you will be able to see for yourself. Because again, this is not magic. If you develop your mind to this extent, then anyone can do it. Anyone can become a Buddha. Said who? Said the Buddha. Anyone can become a Buddha. All it requires is causes. Because Buddhahood is an effect. So, likewise, those people who have developed their minds, who are able to see what happens after death and to beings when they are reborn, what they tell us, folks, I want you to listen to this carefully. What they tell us is, let's say that suicide attempt was by hanging oneself on a rope. So you put the noose around your neck and you hang yourself. Let's say that was the attempted suicide strategy, device. What they tell us is that they go and get reborn in a place, and sometimes it is as a semi, so it's in human form but not in a human body. Or it could be as a preta, right? But whatever form it takes, what sends a shiver down my spine is what they do after they're born there. Not what they look like or, you know, whether they resemble humans or not. That's not the important bit. It's what they do after they're born there. Here's what they do. Because the mental problem has not been fixed one bit, right? What did they do? They broke the body for the mental problem. What they do is, once they're born in that place, they keep on continuing to go through that suicide process time and time and time again. Here's what happens. Say one hangs himself. The person goes and is reborn in this wherever. And then what they do is, the mind arises and the mind still has the same problem. The problem hasn't gone away. So that vexation, that torment, that mental torture, that remains. And they don't see any other solution except for suicide. So what do they do? Because of their demerit, taking one's life is demeritorious. Right? By the power of that demerit, a rope appears in front of them. And then they think to themselves, oh well, that's the only answer I have. So what do they go and do? They go and hang themselves. But all that pain, that physical pain when one hangs himself, the struggling, right, as the windpipe breaks and this person suffocates, all of that, as the circulation of the body comes to a stop, and as the organs of the body are deprived of vital oxygen, all that pain they have to endure. That pain is for real. And they commit suicide. What happens then? And they die, but within air quotes. They die and they're reborn again. Reborn into the same place. Into the same place, what they have done is, as they did in their human birth, they broke the body for the mental problem. So what happens again? They are reborn, and the problem still remains, the mental vexation still remains, because nothing has been done about that. And now they think to themselves, oh my God, there's no point in me living anymore. And what happens? The rope appears again. And they go and put their necks around it, and jump off the chair, and again, once again, suffocate to death. going through the full painful experience, the fear, that survival instinct, and the regret of, oh, I shouldn't have done this, why did I do this, all of that starts to hit you. Because, you know, the mind naturally wants to continue. The mind doesn't want to stop, it wants to continue. It wants to survive, it wants existence, it wants to exist. Right? So, for as long as the mind wants to exist, when any attempt is made as a threat to that, the mind fights back, and you feel that pain, that regret, that remorse, all of that starts to hit you, but it's too late. Nothing, no one to save you. And then you commit suicide again. What happens next? You're dead and you're reborn in the same place, same problem. Then what happens? Now, there's nothing else you want to do because you have this mental problem, deep mental vexation, no answer to be found, right? And what do you have to do? Go and hang yourself. What happens again? A rope appears. This helpless being goes through this process for a very, very, very long time. Sometimes it could be as long as an eon. That, my friend, is an uncountable amount of time. Sometimes many hundreds of thousands of years, they'll go through the same process, time after time after time, because what they're doing is, for a mental problem, taking a physical solution. Because that is what they did as a human being. But as a human being, there was the ability, the possibility, to find a different answer to that problem. To find a solution, a true solution, a practical solution to the mental problem. By speaking to someone who knows how to solve problems with the mind. But they didn't either have the chance, or they didn't have the luck, or they didn't have the merit, whatever. And as a result, they resorted to suicide, breaking the body, for the mental problem. As a human being, although that opportunity exists, once you're dead, now who are you going to go and talk to? There's no one in that world, in the afterworld. In that world, there is no one to go and ask for help. There are no noble friends. There are no Swaminarayanas, there are no monks to go and ask for advice. There are no counselors to go and get advice from. You're all on your own, by yourself. Then there's a rope hanging in front of you. You have a problem, and the apparent solution is right in front of you. Climb onto the chair, put your neck around that rope, or through the rope, and then jump off the chair. Not once, not twice, not thrice, for a very, very, very long time. Until the demeritorious power of that demeritorious deed has expired. Remember, what you're taking is a human life. And a human life is very expensive. It is very expensive to earn one, and it is very expensive if you burn one. So until the demeritorious power has expired, you're in that place. And that could be many hundreds of thousands of years. Eventually, you run out of the demerit. And if you're lucky, usually it takes a long time to come back into the human world. Using the Buddha's simile, it's like a one-eyed tortoise who only surfaces once every 100 years to the surface of the ocean, who looks up and sees the sky. But he sees the sky, he looks up at the sky through the hole in a yoke. Not a full one, two halves that have come together in the middle of the vast ocean. Once every 100 years, the Buddha says, if someone dies as a human and goes and is reborn in a non-human world, the possibility, the chances of then coming back as a human is less, much less than that tortoise resurfacing once every 100 years. Remember, that tortoise only has only sight in one eye, looks through the hole in the yoke and sees the sky. That has a greater chance. That's almost like, to use a more familiar simile, a snowball's chance in hell. What are the chances you can find a snowball in hell? Your odds are better of finding a snowball in hell than dying as a human, particularly taking your life, because that is not going to put you into a good place, and then coming back as a human to eventually still remain the problem and try and find a solution to it. Ignorance and attachment are not treated by suicide. If that were possible, I'd be doing it before you, sir. You have no idea how much I want to put an end to suffering. If taking my life is an answer to that problem, is a practical, workable, feasible solution to that problem, I'd have beaten you to it long time ago. But doesn't work. Doesn't work. No one's a hero for having committed suicide. So listen to me, Nick. You are a hero. I want to see you in person. I want you to come and talk to people. Use your insight, use your wisdom to help people. A lot of people out there who don't realize that there's a truth that exists beyond what they see superficially. They think that pleasure is all. They think that in the sensual world people can be satisfied, and yet see what they do to themselves and among themselves. Fighting, killing. I mean, you're not like that. You don't want to hurt anyone else. In a world where people harm and hurt others, it's in a dog-eat-dog world, my friend. Aren't you just a great person? Your intention is not to hurt others. For your frustrations, you don't take it out on others. Normal people or evil people aren't like that. That is the new normal, unfortunately. So the new normal is, when people are frustrated, when people are annoyed or angry, they just take it out on others. But you're not like that. You don't want to take your frustrations on others, out on others. You know, so people like you should live on, should be here to help those people, to help people to see a different solution to life's problems. Where do you think you're going? It's people like you who should stick around. every mental problem has a solution. That, Nick, I promise you. Every mental problem has a solution. There are physical problems that don't have solutions. You've heard of terminal cancer, right? But there is no such thing as terminal mental vexation. There is no such thing. All mental vexations can be healed. I promise you that. You just need the right medicine. You have asked for my advice. You have asked for my direction. You told me that you appreciate it. And I appreciate you. I like you. I like you a lot. You're a good man. You reached out to me. You've given me a chance. You're willing to listen to me. You're willing to take my hand. Come then. Every mental solution has a problem. That's what we talk about day long, day and night. I have explained the science of mental vexation. If you listen to that, an intelligent man like you, there's no way you cannot understand that. For someone like you saying things like, you know, what you have said here, in just one email, in a few words, right, the entirety of wisdom that humankind has ever known, you put on an email in a few words. Why you like, man? At 29 years of age. People like you should be around. To stick around. To help others. Who are blind. Who are ignorant. Who don't have merits. Who don't have people like you in their life. So let's work together to help those people. It's not you who needs help, man. You see the problem. What about people who don't even see the problem? If those people who don't see the problem, they think the problem is with other people, and then they go and attack others, they kill others, they torture others, they lie, they steal, they backstab. And the consequence of those actions is rebirth in the most treacherous, in the most gruesome of hells. There for a very, very long time. Much, much, much longer than where someone goes if they take their own life. The worst kinds of hells, in the purgatories, that's where they go. So who's going to help them? Who's going to help people who are in a much more dire state than you are? Have I got to do that alone? You're not going to help me? Look at what people do when they want things. They'll steal at the drop of a hat. They'll kill others, they'll stab other people. They'll lie, they break up families. They'll break people's hearts. No compassion towards others. No mercy. No love, no affection towards others. You know, people like you should be around. Just stick around to help people like them. The chances of them, as a result of what they do, going into heaven. If, you know, when that day comes, pigs shall fly. You've got to help them. We've got to help them. We've got to join forces. All of us. All of our listeners. They all care about you. You must have listened to some of the testimonials if you listened to previous sermons. How much there are people who care about others, who are willing to take their time to help others, share their advice, guidance, goodwill, and blessings. People just like you. I enjoy their company just as much as I enjoy yours. So, you gotta stick around. I enjoy having you around. So you tell me, when am I gonna get to see you? When you're coming down? Remember, there's no point breaking up your body for a mental problem. It is worthless, pointless, meaningless, useless. If it contributes one bit to solving the mental problem, I wouldn't be speaking to you like this. I'd say, be my guest. Can I give you a rope? I'd ask you. I'll offer it to you. If what people consider doing when they decide to take their own life, if that solves the mental problem, I'd hand them the rope, personally, with my compliments, before I put one around myself. But it doesn't, my friend, it doesn't. I'm a man of science, you know that, just as much as you are. I look at things logically, with reason. That's why, just as much as, just like you, I don't buy the woo things. Never have done. I didn't come into Buddhism for that. I came into Buddhism because I saw the best kind of science there is. So logical. Such perfect doctrine. This is the only place I found the true answer to suffering. Because that Prince Siddhartha, the story I said at the beginning, he renounced. Just as perhaps one day you might. He realized, this world of suffering, this horror story, I'm not in for that. I want freedom, I want my salvation. So he renounced. He left behind a world of suffering and he went forth, looking for answers. There was no one who could teach him the way. So he worked hard, strenuously, 6 long years. And through his own efforts, he discovered the answer. He realized that attachment is the only cause of suffering. We only suffer because we are mentally attached to things. Where there is no mental attachment, there is no mental suffering. That is what we need to understand, Nick. That is the only reason that we suffer mentally. All the sorrow, grief, agony, pain, frustrations, annoyances. The horror story of a life that you say that you experienced from your very young years. All of that is because of one reason. And we have discovered that reason. So we have some news for you, my friend. We have found the cause of your suffering. So, don't you worry. We have found the cause of your suffering. It is not you being alive. So therefore, terminating that is not the answer. We know the cause of your suffering. The truth that escaped, that might have escaped you all this time, we have that. And I want to give it to you. Freely. Very happily. And wholeheartedly. All I want you to do is come and take it. And free yourself. All you have to do is to listen to the talk, to the sermon, to what I have to say. And you'll be free. You don't have to resort to drastic measures. You don't have to waste this wonderful life, a life that can be put to a lot of good use. A life that is precious, that is of tremendous value, not just to yourself, and I'm not just talking about yourself, I'm talking about all those people out there who need people like you in their life. I feel more for them than I do for you, if I have to tell you the truth. Because there's one of you. There are many millions of them. Billions of them. There's one of you. But one less of you is not a small loss for humanity. Because people like you are very few and far between. People who have insight. People who are wise and have wisdom. And can see through life and look at the suffering that exists. The truth that exists. And then, you know, that's why I do have a lot of respect for you, my friend. Because you're someone who will not allow for suffering to overcome you. You're looking for an end to suffering. Isn't that right? That's why I say I have a lot of respect for you. No matter what others say, I don't care what others say, I have a lot of respect for you. You are someone who's not willing to allow suffering to come and overtake you, to overwhelm you, to consume you. You're someone who says, if I have to end my life to end suffering, I'm willing to do that. Because I want to end suffering. Man, such courage. Who's got that sort of courage? Who's got that sort of determination? You know, when the Bodhisattva, the about to become Buddha, when he sat down under the Bodhi tree, where he attained enlightenment, he made a similar resolve. I care not if the blood and bones and muscles and skin of my body should wither away and I turn into dust. I care not. I shall not get up. I shall not rise until I have put an end to suffering. The day he resolved that is a day we all remember, all Buddhists around the world. So much courage, so much resolve, so much strength and determination, So much so, we even have a statue at our monastery of when the Bodhisattva made that resolve, and the earth trembled under his feet. If I have to pay for it with my life, if that is the price I have to pay to put an end to suffering, I will do that, is what the Bodhisattva did. My friend, isn't that the same thing that you are saying today? You and I, we are on the same side. We are in the same camp. You and I, we hate suffering with passion, don't we? We hate suffering with a passion. We will not allow it to ruin our lives. We will not allow it to consume us. We will always win. I can see how willing you are, what extent, what length you are willing to go to put an end to suffering. So much so, you are willing to pay for it with your own life. Is there a bigger price to pay? Is there a bigger sacrifice one can make? Come on, man. You know, for a guy like you, don't you deserve all the options? That's what I'm saying. I have a lot of respect for you. Because for someone who's willing to pay with his life to end suffering, for a person like that who has so much strength of character, resolve, determination, if only they're exposed to the truth, which is what the Buddha taught, they will realize it in a flash of a second and put an end to all suffering. Because such is their mental vigor, courage, determination and resolve. I want you here, man. Listen to the sermons. You'll find them on the YouTube channel. And understand that it is attachment that causes suffering. All of mental suffering is caused by attachment and nothing else. There is no other reason at all. I promise you, I swear to you, there is no other reason. It is expectation of all things, that this should be this way, that should be that way. Once we realize that mental suffering is self-made, we produce it, we generate it, then we realize that suffering can be brought to a halt, just like that. Ignorance is the root of suffering, is the root of attachment, which in turn causes suffering. And guess what ignorance is? Ignorance is simply not knowing that attachment is the cause of suffering. That is all ignorance is. It is not knowing that attachment is the cause of suffering. My friend, now you know it. Now you know it. Now you know it. Now you know that attachment is the cause of suffering. For a man like you, such energy, such results are determination. You have now found an answer to your problem. Now you do not need to resort to something that would have been meaningless, useless. Now you don't need to take what seemed to be a solution, but wouldn't have gotten you anywhere. It only looks like a plausible solution, but it's much, much worse than that. It's worse than the problem itself. The solution of suicide is worse, much worse, much, much worse than the problem it tries to solve. You understand that, don't you? I know you do. Because you and I, we have something in common. You and I, we want to put an end to suffering at any price. Yes or no? You and I, we have something in common. You and I, we are able to see, penetrate through the veil of ignorance and look at the fact that there is suffering in this world. You and I, we are wise. You and I, we are open-minded. We are willing to consider. We are ready to change. I know you are ready to change. Otherwise, you wouldn't have worded this email. If you were decided, that's it, I'm going to do what I want to do, I don't want to change, you wouldn't have sent us this email, why bother? But no, you are ready to change. Last week, I spoke of people just like you. People who are ready to change. Last week, I spoke to people just like you. Today, I speak to you. Man, you're special. You are special. You are so special. It would be a deep loss for this world to not have someone like you for much, much longer, for a long time to come. Because there are countless people out there who need people like you in their life. Let's help them. Let's help them realize what you have realized. Let's help them see the truth as you have been able to see. Let's help them find noble friends just as you have been able to. Let's help. But to help them, you've got to be around, man. So, thank you. Thank you, Nick. Thank you for giving me a chance. I appreciate it. You have given the Mahasangha a chance. You have given the Dhamma a chance. You have given the Buddha a chance. You have given the Noble Triple Gem a chance. I think that is what I believe is taking refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. You could utter those words, Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, a trillion times. But what you have done is truly seeking refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. Hats off to you, sir. You are more of a Buddhist than most Buddhists in this world. You have given Buddhism a chance. There are sermons out there just waiting for you to listen to them. Take some time out. Relax. Go and listen to some of those sermons. And especially for you, we have made video sermons available. So you don't just have to listen to my boring voice. You can watch me. As I explained to you, the truth that my teachers have taught me when I was desperate, looking for answers. Perhaps had I not come across the answers that I did, I might have looked elsewhere for solutions, just like you did, perhaps. Who knows? Because I wanted to find an answer. I was not ready to allow suffering to take over my life, just like you. Just like the Bodhisattva, he was willing to pay with his life to end suffering. Just like you, man. I see a great person within you. I see such a strong character, such a strong personality, such a brave man, such a courageous man within you. All you need is to realize this. That is the only missing piece of this person. You've got everything else. You've got everything else. The resolve, the determination, that I shall not allow suffering to take over my life. So much courage, the wisdom, the intelligence, you've got everything, the youth. Every opportunity is there right in front of you. So I hope this sermon finds you well. I hope you listen to these words. And I hope to see you one day. Thank you for giving us a chance. I respect that. You have given the Mahasangha a chance. I appreciate that. Thank you. So, take some time, listen to the sermon, listen to this again if you must, if you have to, if you have the time. There are plenty of sermons out there that talk about how exactly attachment is the cause of suffering. Excuse me. And how to put an end to that attachment. It's also simply broken down into very simple logic. I promise you, if there's any sermon on there you can't understand, come back to us. 6-year-olds can understand this. The only reason you haven't is because you haven't come across it before. That's all. Because an intelligent man like you, you probably figure it out by the end of this sermon. Perhaps already you're as cool as a cucumber. And if there's still something that bothers you, come back. Get back to us. Drop us an email. Send us a note. Get in touch. And let us know. Because people like you should stick around. We need people like you. The world needs people like you. Okay? Right, so on that note then, let us transfer the merits that we have all acquired and bring the sermon to a close. Let us take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting for it, listening to the Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage, in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand, and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to Guru Swami Nuhansi and all other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane, may through the power, by the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. There is also transcendental merits we have acquired to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for the sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those of you who have passed on their know-how and continue to extend their well-wishes. May, through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form possible and available to them. May by the power of these merits they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the devas, brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakkadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Shasane. Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. And may through the power of these merits they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been our families, friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey in samsara, and who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in every way they could. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, and may all who have lost their lives in the war, be their friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, including the most recent and prevailing one, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been our friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer merits to them, and may by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in woeful planes, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all resolve that may through the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arahatun Mahanses on this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I, and everyone who has helped make this program a success, become an Arahatun Mahanse or an Arahatmehinin Mahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I have a short announcement to make before we end the sermon today. On the 26th of June, that is next week, which I believe is a Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken, we have the Possum Poi program. It is called Metta Blossoms, as we want the power of Metta to blossom throughout the world. More people should be doing more through speech, body and mind to help heal an ailing world with the power of metta, loving kindness and compassion. So the program will be themed, as I have just described. I want you all to be there, to join in. You will have the opportunity to observe SIL on the day. The program starts at 5:30. I assume details of the event will already have reached most of you by now. But if not, please join us. And fill your day with ample amounts of merit, as well as learning how you could spread loving kindness, metta, to all sentient beings, including yourself. So throughout the day you will be able to listen to sermons, talks, also by Guru Swami Mahanse, who will address you and share with you valuable advice and inspiration as to how to shape your life going forward and into the rest of the year. And also on the day, you'll be able to witness the statue that I just mentioned a moment ago in the sermon, the Bodhisattva statue. So Nick, if you haven't as yet seen the statue at our monastery, then you must join on that day, sir. You must join us. I want you to be there. You'll be able to see the statue of the Bodhisattva, someone who was just like you, someone who was willing to give everything, everything, including their life, in the name of freedom. Now they are true freedom fighters. Because now, right next to that statue, we've had the Bodhisattva statue for a while, but now, right next to that statue, is a board that says, no pain, no gain. And then, right next to that, is a statue of a newly built statue of the perfect one, the fully awakened one, the one who found the answer. That young prince who went on that chariot, renounced, went through immense hardship, 6 long years of asceticism, eventually realized, I have to realize and discover the truth for myself. Through pain, hard work, relentless commitment, dedication, and conscientious effort, he discovered the truth. The truth that it is only attachment that brings suffering, Nick, and nothing else. With that understanding, with that realization, he became the fully awakened one. And from that day on, he spent the rest of his life sharing that message with all of us, all sentient beings. It is because of him, today, I have been able to understand that. It is because of him, today, I have been able to deliver this sermon. It is because of him, today, I have been able to answer Nick's call for help. So it's not me you need to be grateful to, it's he. We must all be grateful to. We'll be unveiling that statue on Bosan Poe Day. And I want you all to be there. To put your hands together. And say sadhu sadhu. As you behold the greatest man, the greatest teacher, the greatest mother, the greatest father, the greatest being, this world has ever seen. So, I hope to see you all in the day. Join us online and engage with us on the day and make a resolve to fulfill the path that he taught us. To put out your fire and the fire of others. In the hope that you and I, and all beings in all worlds, may attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all.